Zion with Aleph, down towards the bottom, right in the middle of the widest lines, Margala. The first word on the line is Nivra, Mamish, split in the middle. Second word on the line is Margala. Alright? Just in keeping with our regular custom, I'll just make a short comment with regard to the last year. And that is, after all the talk we did about learning yes lishma, loy lishma, etc., and all the different definitions of what lishma is, I just want to, in a bottom line way, say that practically speaking, if people are concerned, am I learning lishma, am I missing the point? A person who is learning for idealistic purposes is learning lishma. A person who is learning because he understands that that's what makes him a better Jew, because he wants to be able to figure out what Hashem wants of him in this world, because he wants to please Hashem. In short, for idealistic purposes, is learning lishma. The academics refer back to what we discussed last time and all the different definitions with the different shittas, etc. But just bottom line, Mishnah Berurah, if we'll put it that way. Okay. Margila b'fumei derach. Now again, we're continuing on these sayings that the Amoraim used to be, for each of these Amoraim, this was their saying in life. And that's my justification for putting so much weight on these things. You have to understand that this is what led these Amoraim through life. There's a lot here. Magile b'fumei derav. Rav used to say, Loi ka'olam hazeh olam haba. Olam hazeh is not like olam haba. Ha'olam haba, in the next world, ein boi loy achila, there's no eating, v'loy shesia, no drinking. Veloy piriyah verivyah. There's no procreation. Veloy maso matan. There's no business, meaning there's no earning your needs. Veloy kina. There's no envy. Veloy sina. And no hatred. Veloy animosity. In general, in English, there's a lot of different words for not liking something. Hate is a very strong way of saying it, but sinna really denotes any level of dislike. So maybe animosity is more correct than hatred. Veloy tacharus, and there's no competition. Elo, rather, tzadikim yoishvim, the tzadikim sit, v'atroisem v'roshem, with their crowns on their heads, v'nehenim miziv hashchina. And they enjoy the radiance of the Shekhinah. Shenema, as it says in the Pasuk, Vayechezu Esa Elikim, Vayechlu Vayishtu. This is talking about right after Matan Torah, Har Sinai, the Jewish people bought Karbonis at the foot of Har Sinai. They were so close to Hashem at that time. So it says that they saw Hashem and they ate and drank. Now, that does not mean that they actually ate and drank. What it means is that the experience of seeing Hashem was just as satisfying, or even more satisfying, than eating and drinking. And that's important for the way we're going to understand what's being said here. Okay, so now
the implication, this seems to be that only tzaddikim are in olam haba.
Only tzaddikim are in olam haba, and most of us are tzaddikim. Meaning that the term today, we use the word tzaddik as, you know, the great people of our generation. But the truth is that the word tzaddik means a person who lives the way he's supposed to live. We'll take into account also that when a person goes through what he has to go through in order to cleanse himself, in order to get to Olam Haba, after that he's a tzaddik. However you'll call it tzaddik. But really a tzaddik means a person who's living the way he's supposed to live. The greater level is called a chassid, or something like that. Okay, so now, like we've done with the previous ones, I want to back up and now go through it piece by piece. So Rav had said, again, we're going up, backwards, three lines. Margila bufam meidirav. Rav used to say, Loi ka oylam hazeh oylam haba. Oylam hazeh is not like oylam haba. So that's number one. He's already making a point here. He's saying, get your perspective in place. Here he's basically precluding the other nations who say, Olam Haba is basically all the lusts and sensuality of this world that you'd like to have, but you don't have, you'll have it all in Olam Haba. 70 wives, or whatever else, Chveisvas. So he's saying, no, Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba are not the same. And therefore, get your perspective now already. All the different physical joys, physical pleasures of this world are not to be your end. If you're making an end out of them, you're going to have a bit of a disappointment or a bit of an adjustment when you get to Olam Haba. I won't say disappointment, it'll be an adjustment. The more a person, the Sfarim say that the more a person accustoms himself to Olam Haba concepts, the easier the transition will be. When a person is very, very much attached to material things, the detachment from them will be something of a painful process. He'll enjoy Olam Haba. Everybody who goes to Olam Haba will end up enjoying it. But it's something of a painful process. The fact that at the end of the day, you know, I'm used to having my steaks or whatever it is. I don't know exactly how it works, but just to talk in our terms, it takes a week to get used to no more steak. Okay? So basically what he's saying, to already get the perspective. Learn the perspective that all the physical desires of this world are tools. Don't turn them into ends. Keep your ends focused on something else. There was a fellow, we'll call him Mr. Feldman, very wealthy fellow, who was a big Baal Tzedakah, and he had a very nice family. His children were real B'nai Torah, and he was nearing his end. And he called his children in when he was already lying on his deathbed, and he said, I have two things. Basically everything about the will was straightforward, but two things. First of all, I don't want you opening the will until the end of the Shiva. That's number one. Until the end of the Shiva. Don't open the will until the end of the Shiva. Number two, he said, I want to be buried in my socks. Wants to be buried in his socks. Now, is that acceptable? Not in standard Jewish circles. So there's no such thing as being buried in socks. His children knew that. He tried to tell him, Dad, you know, that just doesn't work. He said, listen, this is one thing that's important to me. I gave a lot of stuck over the years. You know, I get closer to a lot of Rabbanim. Someone will work something out. This is very important to me. I'm insisting on being buried in my socks. He was obstinate about it. You know, no one was going to talk him out of it. And he passed away. And he left this bizarre instruction that he wants to be buried with his socks. Okay. Children didn't know what to do. They went, they consulted with the different Rabbanim, and everybody was strange, you know, surprised to hear. They knew him as a person who would always want to do what the halacha is, but Lamaisa, the Rabbanim Paskin, then, oh, there's no way. With all due respect, he cannot be buried with his socks. And he was buried without his socks. And his children, you know, it was just a lousy feeling about the fact, why did he make this weird request? That they felt bad that this one thing that he was so insistent on was something that they just couldn't do. Then at the end of the Shiva, they opened his will and he said, my dear children, in the will it said, my dear children, you're going to be getting a lot of money from me. But I want you to remember, when you get this money, that at the end, you're not going to be able to take anything with you, not even socks. Meaning, in other words, he had set it all up to get this point across to them. One thing he was trying to hold on to wasn't going to work. Not even your socks. So, the other side of that coin is, just to bring this point home, that there was the other side of the coin. There was a young boy, Warsaw, a young orphan boy, whose mother was having a very hard time making ends meet. His name was Chatzkel. And she needed him to help the family make ends meet. So he went out and started doing some menial labors. He used to make a few zlotys or whatever you call it a week. And okay, come home at the end of the week with basically enough money for bread the next week. And he killed himself, sweated it out for those few zlotys. And he got his money at the end of the week, Friday. So one time, he was on his way home, it was already late Friday afternoon, he went straight to the bathhouse. And he left his money, his few zlotys, in his pants pocket. When he came out, it was gone. Someone had stolen it. And this was very painful. It was doubly painful, because first of all, it was a week's worth of sweat. And second of all, it was all the bread for next week. There was no two ways about it. The math was very straight. And it was very, very much impacted this young kid that you put your whole neshama into it and it just goes just like that. He was very, very affected by this. And it kept on going through his mind. I don't know, they made it through the next week somehow, but this kept on going through his mind. The experience just, he couldn't get it off his mind until he decided, this is a young kid, reached the conclusion that, you know what, Gashmius is just not worth the effort. It's so precarious, and you can kill yourself so hard, and just like that it goes, it's just not worth the effort. He went sinking, he ended up in the Chofetz Chaim's yeshiva, from there he went to Mir. He became known as Reb Chatzko Levenstein, the legendary Mashgiach of Panovich. That was how he started his spiritual career. So again, the point here is, Rav is saying already, get your focus, get the perspective right. All physical faculties are tools. All physical pleasures in this world are tools. Don't turn them into the end, because that's not what you're aiming for. So now, what are we aiming for? So, Olam Hazeh, doesn't have any of the things we're busy with in this world. No eating, no drinking, no procreation, no business, and none of the ills that come along with business. Envy, animosity, competition, etc. Right? Nothing there. Except what? What is it? Tzaddikim sit with their crowns on their head, and they enjoy the radiance of the Shechinah. So what's being stated here? What exactly does this mean? The truth is that to understand really what it means, we can't. As long as we're in this world, we're not going to properly appreciate the experience of Olam Haba. But yet, Rav is telling us something. So there's something for us to appreciate here. So, first of all, the Mefarshim Mamish come and break this down very, very carefully. They break down the words here. They sit. That's number one. Tzaddikim in Olam Haba sit. In Olam Haba we're going to be sitting. There's a double significance to that. So first of all, Reb Tzadik says that sitting is already denoting what our status in Olam Haba is going to be. Nobody sits in Olam Haba. The Malachim are called Oindim. They stand. Being in the presence of Hashem is so awesome and so fearsome that nobody even thinks of sitting. But yet it says the Jewish people are going to be sitting. Because the Malachim, as awesome as they are, and as immense as they are all the servants. The Jewish people are in a different status. The Jewish people are, kiviyachol, the family. The family is going to be sitting. He invokes the halacha of Hilchas Pesach, where it says that everybody's mechuyev to recline at the Seder. A Talmud in the presence of his Rebbe doesn't recline. But a son in the presence of his father, even if he's also his Talmud, does recline. Because, after all, a son with the father is a different dynamic. Even though there's that awe there too, but it's a different dynamic. So that's number one. We come to Olam Haba, there's going to be all these massive malachim there, that if we would see them in this world, we'll be completely stricken with fright. When we come to Olam Haba, they're going to be standing, and we're going to be sitting. Why? Because we're the mishpacha. That's number one. But there's more than that also. Sitting denotes that we're going to be stationary, not moving. In this world, we're always busy. We have to achieve things. Even if, forget ruchnius, right? You ate breakfast, you finished breakfast, you can't sit on your laurels for too long because lunch is coming up. And you can't sit on your laurels for too long because last week's salary is running out. Man is constantly busy tending to his lacks. Man has to constantly be fueling himself with all kinds of things, with money, with food, etc., 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 in order to keep going, right? Your clothing also wears out. So man is never fulfilled in this world. It's impossible to be fulfilled in this world, because even after you ate a meal, 2 hours later you're hungry again. You spend your life filling your lacks. And you do that on the material level, the physical level. You do that on the spiritual level too, right? Basically, that's what it's all about here, to be filling our lacks. In the next world, we're going to be sitting, meaning there is going to be absolutely nothing that we're going to feel that we need any more than what is. Right? Person can be having all the different... In this world, you can only experience one pleasure at a time. Person has the pleasure of eating and drinking. But first of all, eating a steak is not the ultimate experience because you like ice cream also. One can't fill the need of the other. That's why you have the main course and you have dessert too, right? And also, all the pleasure of eating and drinking does not discharge a person's need or pleasure for marital relations, right? A person needs these things. A person needs these different things. In Olam Haba, a person is fulfilled on all levels. A person just is sitting there feeling like there can't be anything more, and that's what you're feeling like all the time. In this world, it breaks into different desires that you feel at different times. But in the next world, a person just comes there and says, this is it. I never need anything more than this. It's like, imagine if a person would be eating the whole time. And I think that they say old Romans used to have a vomitorium. They wanted to keep eating, right? But there's so much you could eat. But they wanted to keep eating, so they had a special place where they went, they made themselves vomit so they can continue eating. In other words, it's a shame that you get full because you can't be eating straight. Right? So, or many of us have had the dilemma of going to a smorgasbord and you don't know what to do. It's a big tzara. If it's a very lavish smorgasbord, and you know that, oh my boy, besides the smorgasbord, there's a whole meal coming up, and it's a big problem because there's so many good things there. But you just have so much room. So you work extra hard, and you feel extra hard, but sometimes, Rachmano Litzlan, by the time the main course is being full, you have no more room left. Oh, and you look at the main course, and you know, now you regret what you ate at the smorgasbord. You don't regret it. You don't know what you should do. In the next world, the bliss is simply ongoing. It's not a situation where you eat and you're satisfied and now you're not enjoying it anymore. The bliss is simply ongoing on every level. The procreation can't compare to it. The eating can't compare to it. It's simply something that's ongoing. A person comes to Olam Haba, he connects to an experience that's unlike anything he ever experienced in this world, and it just doesn't stop, and you don't get used to it either. The beginning is just so exhilarating because the way Rav Dessler puts it, right? The Chazal say, "Yopa shor achas, shokir asvach boilam abayis and nikol chayir elam azeh." One moment, if we'll put it that way, shor doesn't literally mean an hour; it means one period of time. And elam abay is greater than all of elam azeh, all the pleasures of elam azeh. What does that mean? That has to be taken very literally. Rav Dessler says, all the pleasures of elam azeh means, imagine if you could concentrate all the pleasure you experienced in your lifetime, concentrate that into 5 minutes. Those will be a thrilling 5 minutes, wouldn't they? All the pleasure you experienced, meaning eating, drinking, procreation, the thrill of the first time you really made a great business deal, right? The thrill of the time you got a certain position and you couldn't believe, you know, wow, I'm really into big stuff now. Or all these different things, all somehow packed together into one little period of 5 minutes. Everything you ever experienced, those are going to be a thrilling 5 minutes. You're experiencing every thrill and every pleasure you ever experienced in life in those 5 minutes, right? Now he says, but that's not kol chayei olam hazeh. Kol chayei olam hazeh means all the pleasure that everybody experienced. Take that all and pack that into 5 minutes. Every thrill a person ever experienced, when a king became king, right? When whoever it is made his first million, etc., etc., pack that all into 1 5 minutes. But everyone in the world is not it either. It means from the beginning of history until now, everybody in the world packed into those 5 minutes. This is what your first moment in Olam Haba is going to be like, but it's going to be ongoing. And you're not going to get used to it. That's also the difference between Olam Haba and Olam Haba. Each added minute will be just as thrilling as the first minute. So these are some things to note. That's basically what Rav is kind of trying to express here by saying, there isn't going to be any of these things. You're just going to be sitting, meaning the bliss is going to be overpowering and you won't need to do anything. Just as is, sit and experience it. It's going to be ongoing. Now what is that pleasure going to be? Va'atreisehem birosheim. They're going to experience having their crowns on their head and enjoying the radiance of the Shekhinah. Now again, in this world, you tell a person, you know what Olam Haba is? Enjoying the Shekhinah. It's a letdown, right? But in the next world, the point is, you really connect. It's like we've said many times, a person in this world is not even in touch with who he is. It's like a person who's under complete anesthesia. You have certain five senses that we're meant to get through this world with. But really, man is his neshama, which a person just doesn't feel at all in this world. And suddenly the anesthesia wears off and the shama wakes up, the neshama is simply in that state of bliss and is able to really experience. So that's why Sayyim V'Roshayim, Rabbeinu Israel says, he was the Rebbe of the Ramban in Kabbalah. Hatzoseim v'roshayim means connecting to your neshama. That's the crown over your head. In this world, it kind of hovers over your head like a crown, which is not a part of you. You don't experience it at all. But in the next world, that becomes your experience, which is ultimately connected to Hashem, and that is the source of all bliss. Any bliss, any pleasure you appreciate in this world is a little bit of Hashem letting some of Himself trickle through this pleasure, be it through food, through this, through that. But then you're connected directly to the source. So that's the idea. You're sitting. There's nothing more you could possibly want. You're just happy to stay stationary. Every moment you're experiencing that bliss.
So let's say a year goes by and they have an aliyah, what does that mean?
Don't know.
Or
it gets even better.
Or the Tanaimi or whoever are maybe that much closer.
There are different levels in Olam Haba. That certainly is true.
Maybe.
Yet at the same time, the bliss that's in the lowest level of Olam Haba, that's the Kodesh Baruch Hu we're describing before, is everything we've described. How it could be but that, I don't know. At the end of the day, we can appreciate it as long as we're not there. We're just trying in a little bit to put it into words that we can start relating to without even really relating to it.
How do we know this?
What's that?
How do we know this?
We have a Kabbalah from Rav. Meaning, the scriptural sources of Olam Haba are very faint allusions, although there are plenty of them. But Lamaisa, Olam Haba was conveyed to us through Kabbalah, and in earlier times they actually did experience it in this world. That's what we've been learning the Kuzari Shir. In earlier times when Nevuah was prevalent, people could actually connect to this experience through Nevuah. Nevuah was actually experiencing this. Nevuah was experiencing this. So people, they did actually have a tradition, not just of hearsay, but of people who had actually experienced it. Okay. Now, we'll just add two more points. And that is that, first of all, we call the Shekhinah, enjoying the Shekhinah. It's like, how to say, what do you enjoy about the Shekhinah? You enjoy the taste of the Shekhinah? You enjoy how the Shekhinah looks. They'll be enjoying the Shekhinah. That's what nice. What we'll be enjoying, our attachment to the Shekhinah. So the way it's termed is, they'll be enjoying the radiance of the Shekhinah. You'll enjoy the light of the Shekhinah. Now, light is a very spiritual word. We always talk about spirituality in terms of light, seeing the light, right? All these kinds of things. But what is the significance of that? So the Maharal says as follows, and this is also, he's trying to read significance into every last word here, because here basically Rav is giving us our package of what Olam Haba should mean to us. So he says as follows. Eyes, very useful. Right? Eyes are great. But imagine if it's pitch dark. The eyes are useless. You have eyes, they're open. Well, you don't really ever experience pitch dark because there's always street lights. But I mean real dark. As dark as when you close your eyes, you keep your eyes tightly shut. Lamaisa, the whole experience of life depends on if you're not blind. If you're blind, it's a whole different... depends on light. Even when it's dark, Lamaisa, we depend on light. Light is what gives the eyes any significance. Right? So, a person can have eyes, but as long as there isn't light, it means nothing to him, and he's missing the whole world. He's missing the whole life's experience. So, yes, eyes are very great, but it's light that turns on the light, that just makes it all begin. So he says, it's again this idea that we've been saying before. The Shekhinah is the light. As long as you have neshama, as long as you aren't exposed to the Shekhinah, the light isn't on. You are us. Now, we exist in potential. We exist in potential. All the experiences that we experience in life, everything that we know about life, is still like a person with his eyes closed. He hasn't yet felt anything. Right? He knows he has eyes because he feels them. And when you close your eyes, you can even kind of see some imagery. But it's like being with your eyes closed. The Shekhinah is the light that enables the person to really experience his own existence. It's all about just connecting to the Shekhinah. So again, the point is that in this world, as conscious as we are as this world, and as real as it seems to us, really, it's like existing with your eyes closed. And all of a sudden, when you connect to the Shekhinah, your eyes open, and then you really start experiencing what life really is, what life was meant to be. Now, one last point, and if we have to maximize this Gemara, one last point. Sorry, can I borrow your watch?
Sure.
Right. One last point is we'll just add this, and I think we've done this Gemara justice. Is a point that Rav Nachman of Breslov makes. Rav Nachman of Breslov says as follows: the wording here in the Gemara, taken literally, is Tzadikim yoshim v'atoseihem biroshehem. Tzadikim sit with their crowns. We translate it as on their heads, but if we're going very literal, the tzaddikim sit with their crowns in their heads. In their heads. So he says, what does that mean? A crown is something very great, but it's not a part of you. It's outside of you. It's on top of you. It's not really a part of you. It's not in you. It's something external, something separate. Fine. The tzaddikim, in Olam Haba, don't sit with their crowns on their heads. Their crowns are in their heads. It's actually a part of them. What does this mean? So he says as follows: in this world, basically, Mamash represents what we're talking about now. In this world, we're busy talking about all kinds of things. We talk about Hashem, we talk about His love for us, we talk about Olam Haba, we talk about all kinds of concepts of spirituality, which are really great. And we understand them. But that's all. We understand them. Do we really taste them? We spend our lives working so hard to try to connect to it a little bit on an emotional level. But it remains an external level of understanding. Our understanding of Hashem, our understanding of the Neshama, our understanding of Olam Haba are the crowns that we wear on our heads in this world. In the next world, these things turn into the real thing. These are things that you actually live. These are things that you actually experience in the fullest. It's not just a crown on your head anymore, something external. But it's real. All that talk about the bliss of being close to Hashem, about the bliss of feeling Hashem's love, etc., etc., about Olam Haba being the greatest experience that could ever be, all of a sudden it's in the person. It's not outside anymore. Okay, we'll move on. Now, Gedoy L'Avtacha, this is a very famous Gemara. Famous and strange Gemara. Gedoyla havtocha shivtichon HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'nashim. The promise that Hashem promised women is yoser min ha'anoshim, is greater than that promised to men. Meaning, women are in a privileged status in Judaism. They're in a better position than men are. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, noshim sha'ananos. Tranquil or secure women. Tranquil is a better way of putting it. Kumna shmano koili. Arise and hear my voice. Banois baitchois, secure girls. Ha'azeino imrosi. Hear my saying. In other words, the Navi is stressing that women, girls, are tranquil and secure, implying that men are not. Women are tranquil and secure. Implying that men are not. What does that mean? So let's see. So Omar Rav the Rabbi Chiya. So Rav said to Rabbi Chiya, Noshim b'may zachem. How is it that women earn their merit? Meaning, in other words, what, there's obviously some form of merit here that women have over men. How is it that women earn this merit? And the answer is, and here's the classic answer, by raising their sons to learn Torah, and by sending their husbands off to the yeshiva to learn Torah, and they wait for their husbands. This is not easy. This is a challenge for a woman. They wait for their husbands. They send them out, and they're waiting for them until they come home. In earlier times, this was even more so. Today it's Mesilas Nefesh for a woman to send her husband out for an hour at night. We have to appreciate that. In earlier times, they sent their husband out for even a year at a time. It was out-of-town dormitories. But this is the special schus of women. And what's being stressed here is that they're in a better position than men. So The Mefarshim explained this both from a technical standpoint and from an inherent standpoint. I mean, they say as follows. First of all, it takes a lot more for man to earn his place in Olam HaBa than for a woman. A woman has to send her husband off and she's dead. The man himself actually has to be plugging away and sweating it out over the Gemara, which isn't easy. And not only that, but let's say a woman sends her husband off and he chills in the Bais Medrash. He chills. She thinks he's going for a serious learning session and he sits down and schmoozes with the boys. What's with her schus? She's got it. That's what the Gemara is saying here. Her schus begins and ends with sending her husband off. That's what Mrs. Zalman Meltzer once said. He told his wife once, she was famous for her mesirus nefesh for her husband's learning. He was out all the time and she killed herself, you know, that just that he shouldn't have anything on his head, just be able to learn. So he told her once, look, your dedication to my learning is unbelievable. Now I know who I really am. So Lemaisa, when I come to Olam Haba, I don't know where I'm going to get, but you, that's not your business. When you come to Olam Haba, they're going to say, look at all everything that she did so that her husband could learn. The fact that he didn't make anything out of himself, that's what he said. The fact that he didn't make anything out of himself doesn't affect her. So he told her, listen, so they're going to let you straight into the highest of places. Me, I don't know. So do me a favor, when you get there, say that you're not going to enjoy it if I'm not there with you. And then they'll let me in too. Okay, that was Rabbi Zalman in his classic humility, but the point is true. That's what the Mefarshim say here. The point is true. The women have it much easier.
But being a woman is so great, why do we say Shlomo Zanisha?
What's that?
Because being a woman is so great, why do we say Shlomo Zanisha?
Oh, that is a good question. But let me ask you, what do women say? Women say Shosani Kirtzainai. Made me as he desires. Okay. So I'm going to put those questions on hold for a couple of minutes. I'm not trying to get away from it. But as we develop the point further, we'll get back to that. So now, in other words, what we're saying is that it really takes a lot less for a woman to earn her merit than a man. And the truth is, this is true on other levels also. Men face tests that women don't face, especially in our times. Struggles, spiritual struggles, they have to overcome yitzharas that are crazy yitzharas that women are exempt from. This whole concept of learning, man has to be plugging away in order to earn it. Women, much simpler. It sends them off and that's that. Now the Maharal says something amazing. So this is in the technical sense, right? The technical sense. That Lamaisa takes us to women. The Maharal says that this reflects the inherent difference between men and women. And here, I'm going to be accused of discrimination against men. And they're going to say, you know, Beit Shemesh has it all. So, but the Maharal says as follows. He says, women actually are created on a much higher level than men. The point of creation is, what's the main essence of our creation? The main essence of our creation is our faults. That was the main thing Hashem did for us. He gave us faults in order to give us what to perfect in this world. We're here in this world to perfect ourselves. Ramchal says this at the beginning of Das Tvunis. Basically, our main asset in this world is our spiritual shortcomings and our faults. That's what gives our existence meaning. You have to work at perfecting. Don't hold on to your faults. Once you leave this world, it's not an asset. But you put into this world, you are granted gifts. And those gifts are called faults and shortcomings. Those are what enable you to make... Those are what give your life any meaning. A person without any faults, a person is perfect, has nothing to do in this world. He can just die and go back to where he came from. So therefore, he says, what Hashem did was, men, when he put us into this world, he plunged us deeper than he plunged women. Women are closer to perfection, closer to spiritual perfection. Men are further away, and therefore, they have to work a lot harder to get to where they need to get. Women are much closer. And he says, therefore, with just a little bit of effort here and there, they close the gap. And that's why, for them, it's these little things. It's not so little, by the way. For a woman, it's a challenge. But it still requires less avoida, less work than man requires. That's why also in general, the truth is that this is true on a lot of levels. Women connect more easily to spirituality because women by nature are more submissive than men. For men to reach the level where he feels completely subdued before Hashem, where he completely submits himself to Hashem's authority is a longer haul than it is for women. Women can more naturally get to this place. In general, women are more spiritually equipped than men. And therefore, yes, that's what the Gemara here means when it says that women are in a better position, they're more secure. Men, the stakes are much higher. They can mess up more easily and they can mess up worse than women. Men, also the whole concept of wasted time from man is a capital crime. Women, they send their husband off and they can waste the rest of the day. That's not exactly true either. It has to be qualified, but I'm talking in a broad sense. Now, I just finish up this point. Now you get back to the brachas. The brachas that a man says shaleh osani isha, simply understood on the most basic level, and there's a lot more to it, is simply because the maisa we have more mitzvahs than women, right? And that's not, we have more mitzvahs than women. Now, and here's the punchline, and I believe that this is the Maharal also. Shaleh kirtzoinoi is to be understood very literally. He made me according to his will, which we generally understand to mean is a certain, you know, okay, I'm not a man, but he made me how he wanted to make me. But actually, there's something deeper there. He made me in accordance with his will, which means he made me closer aligned to his will than he made men. Men are more distanced from where they're supposed to be. Women are closer to Hashem's ultimate will than men are. That's she'osani kirtzoinoi. Now at the end of the day, on the objective level, we thank Hashem for giving us more mitzvahs. But on the deeper level, this is the bracha that women say, she'osani kirtzoinoi, he made me in more direct, close accordance with what his ultimate will and vision is. Whereas men are further away. Now, okay, this is mamish in a nutshell. But this is the Maharal's very, very unique take on this whole thing.
So in all his thoughts, would a man need an impression?
What's that? That's right. Exactly. Very good. That's where it manifests also. Man is born incomplete. The woman is not. Man needs to have his arla rectified. The woman doesn't. That's very true. So, whatever it is, okay, we're men. But at least we should come away from this with a respect for our wives. For women, lamaisa, the message is that they do have to appreciate this as a very, very foremost function in their life. This function of encouraging their men to make the most out of themselves, that's lamaisa where they find their perfection. Yes, they do have a discount, but they have to realize that the greatness of a woman lies, one of the main areas of greatness of a woman lies, is in the spiritual opportunities she affords to for her husband.
I'm out of chat, I don't know how women are going to be judged, but I've seen women that don't necessarily seem to be meeting the challenges.
That's very so. At the end of the day, people are in position not to meet their challenges. That's true. That's true. Yes, absolutely. No one is guaranteed. The point is that they're more secure than men. Doesn't take all that much. But any human, by definition, is a Baal Bechira, and any Baal Bechira, by definition, can mess up. Okay, we'll stop there for tonight.